actually had an idea for this week.
Okay.
Which is spooky. Hello? Did I? That's one of those moments where I wasn't sure if
the idea was spooky or we wait for it because it's a spooky idea. It's a spooky idea. Here's the idea. Or the idea is spooky.
When is Halloween?
End of next week, I think.
Oh, I thought it might be on. I thought it might be this week for some reason. But in that, maybe in itself, that is quite spooky.
But hang on, Halloween isn't for another 2 weeks.
So that's probably a real bat on a string, rather than a plastic bat on a string.
It's probably illegal to do that to a bat.
I'm going to get sued.
By the Bat Trust.
Spooky litigation.
Well, I guess one thing we have to say is that this is the end of Series 2, isn't it? This is the final episode of Series 2.
Yeah.
We're not going to be around, really, for a true Halloween episode, so we could...
Get it in early,
if you want to be spooky.
Are you thinking of railroading the listener's suggestion? Or do you just want to attach the word spooky to whatever they suggest?
Or we could potentially try and crowbar something spooky into the content every now and then.
Okay.
I mean, crowbars are quite spooky, aren't they, if they're being wielded? Do you know what I mean? It's not that hard to do. You can find it. You can only find a spooky angle.
Maybe we should just do a spooky intro.
Do you think we should?
It's not a bad shout.
So, for example, Ben, things like something spooky just happened, actually. Before we said hello today, which is my cat Bluebell.
Started levitating.
Very, very briefly levitated before landing on the floor again. which he was chasing a small
spider.
And you're saying it's spooky because you said spider in that voice.
I thought that helped.
Or is that how the spider introduced itself?
Arachnid. An eight-eyed arachnophorm.
It was a small one, but from its own point of view, it was pretty big, average-sized.
Okay.
And Bluebell, my cat, was chasing it around.
With an eye to consuming it.
But the spider, which was only... about the size of a pea.
Perfectly round spider.
It's bright green as well. And rolling around under the freezer compartment of the fridge. I thought, that's a spider in a Zorb. That's a spider in a non-transparent Zorb. Spiders, they've mastered Zorb technology. They haven't mastered the transparency effect yet.
Yes.
Is any one explanation?
It was on a stag do.
It was a spider on a stag do. Which, you know, for spiders, obviously, they have to make that the night of their lives because they are going to get eaten, aren't they? After
And there's a lot of ribald jokes about that.
A lot of jokes about the getting eaten.
And also lots of jokes about, hey, let's get legless tonight. Well, you've got 8 of them, so let's get drinking.
Wait. Oh.
And what happened with Bluebell and this stag spider?
So I was trying to think of a joke to do with the idea of a webinar.
That staple of stank.
You're right. Yeah. It was
a reach.
It was a fool's errand. See, Bluebell was chasing this little spider, tawny little fellow. Now this spider was a small spider, but he had big ideas because he thought,
okay,
I'm going to get across this section of floor to the other side.
Even though there's a cat in
the way. And it turned out that Bluebell had other ideas. Bluebell wanted to dance, a sort of sinister dance macabre of death. With the spider.
Meow, 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 meow.
Yeah, like that. So Bluebell does this dance macabre, which is meow, meow, meow. She's kind of up and down and meow, meow, meow. And sort of... And the spider.
No, hang on. Before we carry on, can you explain exactly what you mean? So she was faced with a spider and started dancing.
Yeah, that's what she does. When she finds a small insect, she kind of jumps after them, and then she kind of backs up, and then she's kind of up on her hind legs, and then she's down, and she's kind of swaying. She's moving a bit like a belly dancer, or it's very, it's kind of erotic, but laced with death, you know, Le Petit Mort.
So she shags the spider. But
still... they've shagged, yeah, there's no question.
Uh-oh.
Lewd content warning. Lewd content.
The spider's basically shagged Bluebell. It's a work night, and he's like, I just need to get the fuck out of there, get to work, and I'll process this in my lunch break. Yeah. But what happened last night was absolutely mad.
But it turns out that Bluebell's a kind of Mata Hari character.
Exactly.
A honeypot.
Exactly. So, well, he thinks he's out the door, and he can see the other side. He can see the skirting board where he works.
Yeah. He's thinking his mates are never going to believe it.
He can't wait to get on the WhatsApp group with his mates. And they're not going to believe that he had sex with a giant sort of furry beast, literally about 50,000 times bigger than him. And
with incompatible genitals. With
completely incompatible genitals. the only slight... you know, fly in the ointment being the fact that the cat had an anal gland problem.
Feline
digestive tract talk.
How are Bluebell's anal glands at the moment?
Not great, actually. This is a subset story.
Spooky. Oh.
Looking for Halloween dress-up ideas? Why not dress your children as a cat's anal gland?
They'll be the talk of the school. Simply insert your child's head through the aperture or anal ring piece made out of foam. Load up those little piston guns and they can squirt genuine cat anal gland juice at their friends and teachers. No, what should I do? Finish the spider story or go to anal glands?
Spider,
okay.
Spider, I've got to find out why I'm this.
So basically, Bluebell's dancing...
Back an alien spider.
Bluebell's dancing the dance of the seven veils around this little spider. And what happens is... But then she decides, right, she wants to go for the kill now. She's like, I've had my fill.
Is there a final move that heralds that strike?
The final move is she crouches down with her paws out in front of her and her bum reared up in the air.
Oh man!
Like a sort of the shape of a ski slope of a, you know, those long distance ski jumpers. Ski jump.
Yeah. I got it the first time.
Okay, and so she's crouching down, bump. Yeah, and but what she does is she does that. So she comes right up to the spider and does that. But the spider, Bluebell has this thing. I don't know. This might be all cats, possibly. I know that babies have the same thing. Which is they can't focus on something right in front of them. So then at this point she comes up to the spider to give the killer blow, but the spider,
it's gone,
and suddenly she's cross-eyed essentially. the spider then basically cottoned on that the closer it got to Bluebell couldn't see her. This is the kind of cool bit. So the spider then, rather than walking away from Bluebell, started walking towards Bluebell.
Oh my god!
Because as soon as it got closer, Bluebell couldn't see it. So then the spider was right in front.
That's
of
so Hollywood.
I know, it was amazing.
Just get closer, then he can't see us.
But that's the opposite of what I want to do. Sometimes that's what you got to do, Charlie. Just like what you didn't do when you drove those children over that cliff. Oh yeah.
You're saying I should have driven even faster over the cliff?
I'm saying you should have driven under the cliff.
So then there was this amazing moment where Spider was right in front of Bluebell. Bluebell wasn't moving. What was going to happen next? Bluebell was like, I've lost the bloody spider. Right, fuck it, fuck this, and I'm going to get on with my day. Walked forward, first step, stood on the spider and killed it.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, so it goes to show.
Oh.
Sometimes you can overthink these things.
There's a moral there somewhere, isn't there?
Yeah,
what it is.
Sometimes the right thing to do isn't even the right thing to do. Certainly the wrong thing to do isn't either.
Well, don't have an interspecies one night stand with a British shorthair. I think it's probably the moral of the story. Do we need to warn our dear listeners that there's the possibility in series 3 coming soon that there might be the odd advert sneaked in. Have we done that? I don't think we have. That might happen.
Spooky capitalism.
It would feel like the polite thing to do.
I wanted just to sort of ambush them on episode one of series three. Yeah.
What? Okay. With a solid 7 minutes of adverts about
Peloton.
Deals on sofas.
Let's go, Peloton. Why don't we just say let's go, Peloton, quite a lot during this episode, just to get them into the mood for...
Okay. I imagine probably most of our listeners, they're very into the Peloton lifestyle.
Yeah.
That's who's listening. Right, guys?
Let's go, Peloton. I hear that advert all the time. I hope we get the Peloton advert.
Are you being algorithmed for it?
I think I must be. I must be like right in the crosshairs of someone who should buy a Peloton. Wow. Maybe they've seen my diet.
Look, the fact is, guys, I'm just being, you know, genuine when I say that Hello Courgettes has changed my life. You know what I mean? Like, it's just so easy. Every Monday, Hello Courgettes, put courgettes through my door, through my...
Every Monday, I get 3 kilos of courgettes left out in the rain outside my doorstep.
Hi, courgettes. And it's like every day now I've got courgettes. Just like I didn't even have to think about courgettes because I'm thinking about because I'm thinking about them anyway. Because I've got so many courgettes that I'm giving them to friends and I'm having to set fire to them. Hello, courgettes.
You've given so many to your friends that they're having to giving those courgettes away as well.
Yeah.
And who are they giving them away to? They're giving them away to the Hello Courgettes people.
Exactly.
That's where they come from in the first place.
It's the first courgettes by post service that sends its courgettes inside a marrow.
It's the safest way to transfer a courgette. So all you do is you could get a free hammer with the first delivery. So you just smash through the marrow. And there'll be 3 or 4 courgettes in there. And a courgette recipe, which is one of three, which is either boil the courgette, grill the courgette.
Whole boiled courgette.
Or poach the courgette. And it's like...
Which is not to be confused with boiling it.
Not to be confused with boiling it. The difference with poaching a courgette is you put a tiny bit of vinegar in and you spin the water so that when you drop the courgette in, it kind of spirals.
It stays completely upright in the vortex, doesn't it?
It stays completely upright.
And it comes out in a perfect courgette shape.
Exactly. It's like literally you're looking at a courgette by the end of it.
So yeah, Henry's right. We've accepted a large amount of money from a courgette delivery company.
Yeah.
They're going to become our major sponsor starting from the beginning of the next series.
Yeah, don't worry about the fact that it's now called 3 Courgette Salad either. It still can be found in the same place.
It was always going to be called that, wasn't it?
Well, we had to battle. They wanted it for us to change it to 1 single boiled courgette.
Yeah.
And that's when me and Mike have both been basically sacked, and it's just Henry talking about boiled courgettes. That's the end point.
It will be, yeah. This is a goodbye from Ben and I as well, this episode.
Welcome to Series 3, Episode 4. Let's stoke up the courgette machine. And what's this week's topic?
It's courgettes.
Yeah, no, but it's really going to be the same. Apart from that, and also the fact is about courgettes is they're full of vitamins.
And anecdotes.
And anecdotes, aren't they? And think about all the best memories in your life. How many of them don't have courgettes in? The time your dad helped you to learn how to ride your first courgette.
The time you took your courgette grade 6 exam.
Inviting that courgette to the prom. You got so nervous, didn't you?
That time you thought you were giving birth and it turned out to be a courgette.
What a waste of 9 months. On a serious note, my fridge is full of courgettes.
Yep.
We get a veg box and we never eat the courgettes because they're rubbish. So just slowly over time, the fridge gets fuller and fuller with courgettes until it's mainly courgette.
Yeah.
Then the courgettes start rotting into a really, they tend to really like mulchy, pulpy.
Yes. Really dark.
They're really awful when they go off.
Green paste.
Yeah. Mm. I've noticed something with carrots, by the way, in the fridge. You know, carrots might end up getting left in the fridge for quite a long time in my home and not eaten. And when I go to the carrot bag, it's been there for ages, rather than all the carrots being slightly soft, it's almost as if the carrots have decided to elect one carrot as the sacrificial carrot, and that one's gone completely bendy so that you can turn it for its tip to touch its sort of rear, if you know what I mean, and all the others are fine.
And if they're able to organise to that extent, you have to ask yourself, should we be eating these?
these beautiful, intelligent creatures. Intelligent,
yeah.
That clearly have a sense of...
Selfless creatures.
Have a sense of teamwork, have a sense of...
And sacrifice.
Sacrifice. And should we be feeding them to donkeys?
It's sobering stuff.
It really is sobering stuff.
Anyway, that's Hello Courgette. Just go to www.hellocourgette.courgette. Okay, let's turn on the bean machine.
Yes, please.
We've had a few emails, actually, about how sometimes I will announce who the person is who has sent in this topic before the bean machine jingle is played. And they're saying, well, how can you know who sent it in before you've generated the...
They should understand that Ben is one with the bean machine. You can, there's no point where you can say where Ben ends and the bean machine begins.
We've exactly, and that's why he can't have, and that's why he can't ever have it removed, because it's surgically impossible.
Yeah.
They're too closely aligned. You don't
And also what I'd say is, like, when we play the sound, that is just a jingle, because if we recorded the actual sound of me expressing...
Oh, no.
No.
...the topic from the machine, I mean... No one should hear that.
Well, also very few people would have the audio set up at home, the correct number of subwoofers and top-level speakers to actually, you know, with surround sound.
Yeah, you need IMAX-level sound system to fully appreciate that.
Yeah. Best-case scenario, it will short-circuit whatever device you're listening on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Worst-case scenario, your head will, because it won't be able to comprehend what's going on, the nerve endings will get so confused that you'll end up with owl head. So your head will... rotate round.
And you'll cough up a pellet.
Cough up a pellet. You'll stumble out into your back garden. You'll see that all the birds have dropped out of the sky directly above your living room.
And you'll just have to live as a scavenger from then on. And a scavenger is looking the opposite way from where he's going. Which, you might think scavenging sounds easy now, but believe you me.
It's not a mobile owl head. It's like stuck.
No.
It's stuck.
So yeah, when you're walking past things you could have scavenged, but it's too late because you've gone past them. Your head's on the wrong way around. You're like, oh no, that'd have been good.
Yeah.
You've got to keep going.
You've got to keep going. Or you'll see something that you could scavenge right now, and you'll try and walk towards it, but you'll be walking the other way. So then you think, right, I flip myself around. You now can't see something that you can scavenge.
It's gone.
You're walking the right way, but you might as well not be, because you can't see where you're going. I mean, that you'll be wrestling with that kind of thing, those ideas.
Yeah. So the jingle masks all of that, basically.
It's to protect you.
Yeah. Everything we do on this podcast is to protect you.
Exactly. It's like, and this has been mentioned on the podcast before, it's like, don't look directly at an eclipse. I thought I'd test that out by looking directly at an eclipse. I've got permanent retinal damage.
And if you hadn't done that, then no one would have known about that.
Exactly. So this would be like listening to an eclipse, essentially.
And you have, Henry, haven't you?
I have listened to an eclipse, and I've got permanent ear canal damage. My ear canals are actually quite similar to what's happening in Venice.
Too many cruise ships.
But a great place to buy a little ornamental mask. Okay, this week's topic sent in by Dustin.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't say where he's from, so we'll assume the fine Hanseatic city of Bremen.
I can picture him eating one of those little delightful curved little Bremen biscuits.
Oh yeah,
that they probably eat in a little Bremen cafe as he was coming up with this idea.
One of those lovely little curved Bremen cafes.
Well, there's little curved, tiny little curved Bremen cafes.
Mm. And the topic is the Titanic.
Oh.
What?
Now, obviously, there is a human death toll, so we must be respectful to the memories of those lost at sea.
None of them would have been alive anyway, though, now, would they?
Is that true?
I think if you were born on the Titanic,
right,
and made it out, how old would you be now? 110? Thereabouts?
So you'd have to have been born on the Titanic and eaten exclusively oily fish since.
Yeah, you would have had to have been raised by walruses.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you'd be hardy. So you're probably more likely to have a bit of longevity, I think, probably. As a result.
Is it your opinion, Mike, that if you had two twins genetically identical.
Yeah.
One brought up by a family living in a suburban house in Exeter.
Yeah.
And one brought up by a family of walruses in the Arctic.
Yeah.
The walrus baby would live longer.
Yeah, because it gets less exposure to house dust mites.
Yeah, which is the real killer.
Less likely to fall in with the wrong crowd. Less likely to get into street drugs, for example.
That's true.
Less likely to get involved in a road traffic collision.
Yeah.
Less likely to be conscripted.
Also, this will surprise a lot of people, less likely to be eaten by a killer whale.
Why? Because they've been trained by their parents to know what to do.
Well, because Henry's been crunching the numbers.
I've been crunching the numbers while Mike was speaking. And actually,
but isn't the problem that a walrus would teach its offspring, if you are approached by a killer whale, plunge your huge tusk-like teeth into its mantle?
Whereas
which
in
a
Exeter,
baby would struggle to do.
Where in Exeter, no one's saying that.
No one's ready for killer whales. Are an absolute bloody nightmare around here because no one's ready for them. They do their bike safety,
yeah.
You know, but there's no orca safety in year three.
So if an orca was approaching an extra child, you know, he would probably just keep plunging his huge tusk-like teeth into the pack of crisps he was eating or whatever. Yeah.
Blindly ignore it.
He wouldn't know.
It's not on the list of hazards.
Exactly, and that's all a walrus is thinking about 24/7 is. Killer whales, killer whales, killer whales. Jesus Christ, killer whales, killer whales. They're literally called killer whales. Fucking hell. they're stressed about it. The only thing between me and the killer whale is a chunk of ice that I'm sitting on. Do you know what I mean? That's all they're thinking about. Whereas in Exeter, presumably there's a marine life centre.
Yeah, I mean, we have to travel for it a bit. Torquay and Plymouth, that's where you'd go for your aquatic tourism experience.
They've not got a killer whale though, have they, Mike?
They've got a killer whale at the front door.
A plastic one?
Real killer whale that you have to get past to get in.
What, taking tickets and stuff?
Yeah. And you have to, and it tells you a riddle. It says, riddle me this, and then it tells you the killer whale riddle.
Yeah.
And if you don't solve it, then it flips you up in the air like a bit of pizza dough, waits until you're a perfect circle of thin, meaty material, swallows you whole.
Yeah.
So a rough day out.
There's that footage, isn't there, of a killer whale just toying with a seal, throwing it up in the air just for fun.
Mm.
And aren't they like one of the only sort of creatures in the animal kingdom that will just play with an animal until it dies?
It's the evidence that we have to know that killer whales have 98% identical DNA with that of a domestic cat.
Yeah, exactly. The line between bluebell and a killer whale is very, very short and thin. Well, it's obviously short, but it's thin.
Yeah. Could a bluebell successfully breed with a killer whale?
You know what? It's an experiment that we have talked about for hours on end.
Well, there's all these travel restrictions, aren't they?
There's travel restrictions at the moment.
Commissioning the right sort of ice-breaking, sea-going vessel.
Well, you need
it's tricky.
Yes, and also you need both kinds of ice breaking, don't you? Because also introducing the cat, once you've got through the actual ice, the metaphorical.
Yeah.
That's the easy one.
Yeah, exactly.
Realizes the easy one.
That'll seem easy by the time you've got bluebell and a killer whale into what a mocked up Italian restaurant. Yeah. So once you've got them in the harness, well, your bluebell will obviously have to be in a harness,
an Arctic dive suit as well.
Sure. Bluebell will need to be in an adapted sort of Victorian deep sea diving suit sort of thing with a harness so she doesn't plunge all the way to the bottom. She'll need a minimum a moth in there with her just to keep her entertained. If she doesn't see eye to eye with the killer whale, she'll panic if there isn't a moth in there with her. So you'll have to have kept that moth alive as well throughout the journey.
So your tactic is to send bluebell down rather than bringing the killer whale up? Because killer whales can live on land for a while, right? You just keep them moist, chuck a bucket of water over it.
It just seems polite, doesn't it?
I mean, in the sort of global battle to prove this point one way or the other, there may well be a Swedish team on the other side of the Arctic.
No doubt.
Or Antarctic, trying it the other way around, trying to hoist the whale up. You know what I mean? But this is the one we're committed to, and too much investment has gone into this to back out now. we're plunging the cat under.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the killer whale. Mocking up the Italian restaurant underwater or outside.
Well, that's why you actually use the the Italian zone of the Titanic wreck, haven't you? So you've refurbished that.
It's actually, weirdly, the cheap way of doing it is you set it there.
Because most of the infrastructure's there already.
You refurbish their Italian zone. Because obviously they had a central food court, didn't they? Which had an Italian zone, French zone.
Fijian zone. A burrito shack.
Yeah. Burrito shack, there was an it too. There was an it too. Churros. Didn't they?
Lovely churros, didn't they?
A churros counter.
And famously, the churros maker kept making churros, even as...
Well, hence the phrase, making churros on the decks of the Titanic. Well,
it's like rearranging the seats around the churros stand.
Yeah, it's like dunking your batter in cinnamon, ready to feed it through the nozzle into the deep flat fryer on the Titanic.
While Rome burns.
And while Rome burns. Mm.
Is there another Titanic phrase?
Well, you could say he's a Titanic wanker. Does that count?
Yeah, it's those two.
Those two. No, but the churros stand on the Titanic, it was called, it had a funny, witty name, it was called, they said it couldn't be dunked. That was what it was actually called.
Yeah, and that was actually the first person they ran to when they hit the iceberg, the first person they ran to that they thought might have the expertise in, okay, you know about dunking. You're the guy on the ship that knows about dunking. Well, we're about to get, this is the biggest dunking in history that's about to happen. What do we do?
And he was only a 14-year-old, he was only a teenage concession staff. It was a lot to ask of him.
He didn't understand the physics of it at all.
He was just saying, they kept saying it was undunkable. They said it was undunkable.
I mean, the only plan he had was to cover himself in cinnamon and feed himself through the nozzle directly into one of the lifeboats.
And you know what people are like when they panic? Then I think at least 40 or 50 people followed suit after that.
Churros themselves.
They churros themselves.
And the sad thing is they ended up identifying him by the cinnamon markings, didn't they?
on his dental record. The cinnamon stains on his teeth.
I mean, the truth is he was eating so much churros, that guy was probably only going to live a couple of weeks anyway.
Yeah. It was just his gnashes remained. His gnashes eventually washed up on the shores of Rhode Island 14 years later.
Found by whalers.
The other day I was walking along and this doesn't cast me in a very good light. There was a sort of group of three... I'm going to say youths. Uh-huh. And sadly, I've got to an age now where if I see a group of teenagers like that, I do, my heart slightly sinks and I slightly worry they're going to sort of throw a milkshake at me, mm-hmm. as happened recently. Mm. But I was being a bit judgmental about them a bit. I was thinking, oh no, I hope they're not trouble, which I don't think is a very good way to think, but that's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Yeah.
And one of them then approached me and I thought, oh shit. And he went, oh mate. And I was like, oh God, what's it going to be? And he went, where did the Titanic leave from? And basically, him and his mates were having an argument about whether it left from Liverpool, Belfast, or Southampton.
So is that really? The truth about teenagers, that if you just give them enough space, they'll basically turn into middle-aged men discussing trivia?
No, it was built in Belfast, and it was officially opened in Liverpool, but it actually left on its journey from Southampton.
Now, the point is that the base of the ship was made of separate compartments, and the idea was that if one of them flooded, it wouldn't move through to the others. But of course, they hadn't considered the fact that if more than one compartment was actually broken by a big enough iceberg, the whole thing would come down. That's why it was engineering genius. I'm not denying that. But they overreached for the technology of the time. hang on, there's an adult coming. Oh, fucking hell, mate. You got some Alco Pops? Keep buying me some fags, mate. Right, he's gone. So what I'm interested in is, is this a story about colonialism at the end of the day? Do you know what I mean? Conquering the new world.
It's the ultimate metaphor for the class divide when you think about it.
It really is. It absolutely
and that's sunk, just as the class divide will eventually sink in the real world. Mm.
Yeah, and you know what's disgusting is I heard that they spent more on crockery for that ship than they actually spent on veterans of the Crimean War. Yeah, but is that what we're saying is happening?
I think so.
I think so. Yeah,
that's what's happening.
And I like that they eschewed the internet as well.
That's true. Yes,
they eschewed it.
I obviously sort of project the image of a guy who knows his
Titanic
facts.
Who was alive at the time to them in their eyes.
Who was maybe on the ship.
What about, we should ask that old duffer.
Were you able to supply them with the answer?
I said I wasn't 100% sure, but I thought it was Southampton. At which point one of them went, I told you it was, I told you. And they all started like ribbing their mate.
And they started pelting you with milkshakes.
Then the
as a way of thanks.
Then the pelting began. Just in case any teenagers ever need to ask you this, it sank in 1912.
12, was it?
12.
Are you trying to preempt email bollockings, Ben?
Yeah, we talked about this, didn't we, this week? Basically, we've realised that every week, often it's normally me, I'll say something that just isn't true.
Yeah. Mm.
And then we'll just get some light bollockings in the email.
Yeah.
Just some light, they're never too harsh.
Yeah.
But just keeping us on the straight and narrow, someone just being like, just so you know, you're wrong.
Shape up.
Yeah. I'm just going to give you a light bollocking. But I think we should do a new section. I was saying this to Mike. I can't remember if I spoke to you about this, Henry.
No, you did, yeah.
Listener bollocking of the week.
It does need a bollocking jingle.
It does.
Yeah.
Perhaps that'll be ready for the next series.
Well, we could do, no, I think we could do listener bollocking of the week this week.
Accessing listener bollocking. Bollocking loading. Bollocking loaded.
Are you ready, Mike, for listener bollocking of the week?
No.
It's from Walter from Austria.
Okay.
He signs it off. Yours truly, Walter, brackets from Austria, brackets, PhD.
Oh, crumbs. It's going to be a PhD level bollocking.
Yeah.
Is Mike about to get taken down for his Viennese finger rant?
Assuming that's what he must have a PhD in.
Of course, it will be viennoiseries of one type or another.
I refer to your podcast, brackets, Three Bean Salad by Packer Wozniak et al. I don't like being et al.
No, that's a bit rough, given that Ben is less letters than et al.
He is doing last names, to be fair. I've got Partridge. Mm.
Okay.
Episode Portraiture, minute 42, seconds 3.
Okay.
Where you claim the glass is technically a liquid.
Oh, no. Do you know when that was said?
I said that.
I think Henry said that, actually, wasn't it?
It wasn't even Mike.
Henry said that, but I accepted it wholesale, but I knew at the moment that happened, I thought, this feels like something we're going to get bollocked about at some point.
And Mike said, the shard will look like a giant nipple in 500 years' time.
Which I stand by.
Surely, the idea that someone's got an issue with that, come on.
Walter says, glass is, of course, not a liquid in any sense, but an amorphous solid. It does not flow, even on the scale of centuries. The myth of glass being a liquid probably came about because old church windows tend to be thicker on the bottom, suggesting glass flow was responsible. In reality, making uniformly thick glass was not as feasible as it is today, and church windows were simply put in with the thick part on the bottom for practical reasons. The shard will not look any more or any less like a nipple in 500 years than it does now.
Well, it's easy to say that, isn't it? Because none of us are going to be around in 500 years to prove the point.
Exactly.
I challenge Walter to a
duel.
Frozen head off.
A what?
Me and Walter, we're both going to freeze our heads at the moment of death. And in 500 years' time, someone needs to reanimate us. And we're going to have a look and see whether or not it looks like a nipple.
So you'll both just have your fleshy functioning heads attached to sort of withered, desiccated corpse bodies in the next day.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know what the winner wins. We might have to work that out at the time, see what's available.
A body?
A body. That'll do.
Yeah, you get their viable organs.
That seems fair. If Walter accepts the challenge.
I can't see him backing down at this stage. He wrote a very forthright email.
Well, Walter, as you pointed out, church windows are thicker at the bottom, but you, I think, are actually something thicker at the top.
Henry, come on.
Henry, golly.
This isn't bollock a listener this week. It's listener bollocking for the week.
Saying that water isn't a liquid, it's an amorphous solid.
Didn't say water was a solid. Although water can be solid.
Nice try. Nice try. It's the old specious argument, Rick. I tried and tested.
That's good. Now, saying that glass isn't a liquid, it's an amorphous solid.
Eat my amorphous solid, Walter.
No, it's like saying that a ham sandwich isn't a sandwich, it's two bits of bread with some ham in between. isn't it?
You are truly a rhetorical master, Henry.
No, but
and that was off the cuff, dear listeners.
It's like podcasting with Aristotle.
Walter, here's a little experiment for you. Take an ice cube, yeah? Stick it in a gin and tonic and have a drink and chill out. Yeah?
Wow.
All right.
Henry.
Golly gosh.
I think we've lost a potential courgette consumer there.
No, but what is...
Walter will come back fighting.
My question to Walter is... And Walter ought to know this, basically, being from the country which has made an entire economy run on cream onto delicious, fancies.
What's that got to do with the shard?
delicious baked fancies.
You're playing for time, Henry. We can tell you're playing
cream,
for time.
Cream? Look, all the different states, solid, gas, liquid.
Cream.
Cream. They're all on a sliding scale, and they can check. I don't have to go over this. They can change by applying energy to them. You put energy into some meat by heating it up.
You get cream.
You whip meat. You have some whipped pork.
You get amorphous gas.
You get liquid meat. It liquefies, whatever. You stop it just right, it's still solid but cooked. But there's a whole sliding scale you could go on if ovens went up to that temperature, which they don't for very good reason. And it wants liquid meat. A solid, liquid is an amorphous solid because if you solidify, if you heat, reduce the temperature on water, it turns into ice, you heat up water enough, becomes gas.
Same for me.
Same for meat. They're all on a sliding scale. So for me, an amorphous solid surely is a liquid, isn't it? Because there's not a single liquid out there that you can't solidify. What are the different liquids? Gravy.
Corn flour will thicken that.
Corn flour will thicken up nicely, turn it back into a solid. Yeah? I mean, what are some other solids?
Tiger.
Tiger. If you heat up a tiger enough, which obviously you wouldn't do because they're in danger, but if you did heat up a tiger enough, eventually it would turn into a gas.
Which would be extremely dangerous.
Be very, very, very dangerous gas.
Man-eating gas.
Be a man-eating gas. Which means it'll get straight out of the zoo through the, no problem escaping the zoo. That, you know what I mean? Luckily, the nucleus is in the individual molecules probably aren't intelligent enough for it to recoagulate into a tiger on the other side of the bars and then start terrorizing the canteen. That's not.
So that was Titanic. Thank you, Dustin, for sending that in. As always, the email address is 3beansaladpod@gmail.com for any and all correspondence. And you can email us for any reason. But we've had a lot of emails this week. We won't get through them all, unfortunately, but there's some... Well, we read them all and we appreciate them all. We just haven't got time to read them all out. I wonder whether one day we should do a clearing the mailbag episode.
That's not a bad shout.
I think that's not a bad shout, is it?
We've had an email from someone called Lewis, and I like this one because he's done a bit of maths for us.
Okay.
Hi, Beans. So this is making reference to an episode from a while ago about dystopias, where Henry talked about making a movie called Cube the Movie.
Right, yes, I remember.
In which he described that the script would be a cube, a perfect cube.
Yeah.
He writes, assuming it's written on A4 paper that has been cut into square... 210 millimeters by 210 millimeters, the cube script would then need to be 210 millimeters high to be a cube. Also, assuming it's written on standard 80 GSM printer paper,
I think that was always your intention, wasn't it?
Yep,
Henry, yeah.
Which is 0.06 millimeters thick, then the script would need to be 3,500 pages. Estimating that one A4 page of a script is equal to 1 minute of screen time minus the 87 millimeters cut off to form the square would equal about a third of a minute removed. So the film would need to be 3,500 pages times 40 seconds equals 140,000 seconds or 38.89 hours. Cheers, Lewis.
I think that sounds... I think any listener will know that Henry is not much of a self-editor. And so that's probably about right.
Yeah, that would... I'd probably take a while to whittle down an idea to that, to the punchy 38 hours. Gosh, that's amazing. So it has to be 38 hours long.
It might need an interval.
when it comes out. You'd have to have breaks for the audience to go to work, for example.
We've got a lot of emails. So this next one, I'm not actually going to read out the email. I'm just going to tell you the information within. So someone called Iona or Iona. Mm-hmm. In Wales, you'd say Iona, but maybe it's Iona.
Iona is, if it's Scotland. The Scottish
she's
Island,
from Scotland. Iona. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Basically, we were talking about Depeche Mode tribute bands a couple of episodes ago. Henry suggested one called Depeche Chode.
Did I?
Yes.
Yeah, you really lowered the tone.
I can't believe that made the edit. I don't think I've heard that episode. Or have I?
Well, since then, a number of people have tweeted us saying they had to look up what chode meant. And
oh, I'm sorry, everyone.
We're kind of just quite disappointed, really.
I'm really sorry, everyone. I assume that wouldn't make the edit. I don't think I heard back the email section from last week.
Mike left it in.
Oh, thanks a lot, Mike. Thanks, Mike.
I left it in and I definitely sent you an edit and said, are you happy with the edit? And then you waited an hour. And said, yes.
Yeah, that's what I do. That exactly, Mike. That's my system. I look at how long the episode has come out at. And I start watching, normally, at the moment, it's The American Office on Netflix. Set the alarm. Yes, I've listened to it. Sounds good. It's a perfectly good system until you mess it up. Cheers.
Iona's emailed us basically to tell us that she lives in Aberdeen and that there is a local band there which is actually called Depeche Chode.
Wow.
And she sent us the link to their Bandcamp page.
Here's what I'm interested in is, is it a Depeche Mode tribute band is my first question, or is it a band that's just called Depeche Chode?
They're not a Depeche Mode tribute band. They do their own compositions.
But they thought that it would be a good idea to name themselves with an offensive pun on another band's name.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we've had an email from someone. They've given their name, but I'm going to anonymise them.
Okay.
Because I think it might do reputational damage if I...
Are you going to Susanise them?
Yeah, let's say it is a man, but let's call him Susan.
Yeah.
He works as a pilot for a major European airline.
Bloody hell.
Last night, while operating a flight back from a Greek island to London, I was presented by the cabin manager with the choice of hot meals for me to enjoy. It happens every flight, and I'm never particularly fussed about what I have. But this night was different, for staring up at me from the menu card was an option which, having seen it, I knew I simply had to have. Three bean chili.
Oh.
Of course, I was reminded of your podcast, and I'm vaguely tickled by the idea of basing my meal selection on my fondness for the podcast.
It was like a good omen.
Mm.
Well, the airfarer.
Mm.
The meal arrives. Instantly, I knew I'd made a huge mistake.
Uh-oh.
I'm a bit of a wuss when it comes to spicy food anyway, but this chili was hot. So amused was I by the podcast title cropping up that I'd completely neglected to check the spice rating for the meal. I now know it's a 3 out of 3 chili symbols.
Do not operate heavy machinery. For example, a jet.
Immediately, my mouth was on fire. Fortunately, the other pilot was in charge of the radios, because I'm quite sure comprehensible speech was already well beyond me. I need water, and fast. By this stage, my breathing pattern is akin to something I'd only observed previously when watching my wife give birth to our children. I pressed the call bell to the cabin crew, hoping that when they buzz me on the intercom, I'll somehow be able to convey to them that I need some water. But of course, they're all having dinner too, and are sequestered away at the back of the aircraft. They haven't even heard the bell. I press it again, and again, and again. To any passengers at the front of the aircraft, there's now essentially a strange digital version of tubular bells pumping out from behind the cockpit door. Finally, one of the crew hears it and begins to make way towards the cockpit.
Thinking the plane's been hijacked by Mike Oldfield. Which has a specific set of protocols that goes with it.
I watch as they plod up the cabin, pausing several times as they are stopped by passengers. What feels like an eternity later, they are about to reach for the interphone when, with impeccable timing, we hit a pocket of unexpected turbulence.
Yeah.
Often this will be momentary, but unfortunately for me and my flaming taste buds, on this occasion, it was continuous, leaving me still without water. Then suddenly, inspiration. I remembered that in my bag was a handful of Long Life UHT milk sachets.
This is incredible, this story.
Trembling, with tears streaming down my face, I tore one open and suckled at the sweet, cooling teat. It took 4 sachets before I was even remotely quenched.
Wow.
He says, I thought you might be interested to hear that your lukewarm banter directly caused a somewhat fiery episode several miles above Croatia.
Good God.
Wow.
So he could have sent a plane out of the sky.
Wow.
That goes to show, don't order food based on podcast. Based on your favorite podcast.
There is a clear moral to that story.
And also why planes now, since that incident, now all have to have not just masks that come down, but Yop.
Yeah.
You can put a button in Yop.
Cold Yop dispensers.
Cold Yop just flies down at your face.
Yeah.
Also, most airlines have now decided no longer to serve the three bean chili. No. Instead, they largely serve courgettes. Ellie emails, "Hello, Beans. I work for a famous Viking museum, and I'm happy to confirm that the Vikings did not force their elderly family members to jump off cliffs when they were no longer useful. In fact, we have evidence of them living well into their 70s. And this is the good bit. I think I know what Viking museum she's talking about, right? It's the Viking museum.
Yeah, it's got to be, right?
Okay. It must be the Jorvik Viking Centre, surely.
Yeah, it's the only one. Yeah.
She writes, "I'm happy to provide a free tour. If you're ever in York..."
Oh, we're going to be on our way to the Dragon Soup Cafe at some point.
Perfect stopover.
"As long as Henry promises not to turn the museum into a predatory tech company. Best wishes, Ellie."
Well, we can't promise that. He sweeps through towns and he siliconizes them.
He's a modern day Viking of tech.
Yeah, when you're a tech entrepreneur, you're seeing opportunities wherever you go. That's my meat and drink. Do you know what I mean? That's the air I breathe. Is how do I convert this into a tech company? Well, obviously the challenge is obviously it's underground, so Wi-Fi is going to be a challenge, but it's underground?
Shouldn't have thought so. It's indoors. That's not the same thing. Do you think indoors is underground?
Yeah. Well, it's under the... Indoors means it's got a ceiling on it. If you've got a roof garden, you're standing in a roof garden, there's plants growing on it. How is that not the ground? You fall over. What if you not hit the ground? What have you hit? Well, just off the top of my head, I would scoop out the craniums of the Viking effigies they've got standing around, fill those with jelly beans. So already you've got a sort of tech atmosphere.
What, sort of like foosball tables and beanbags, that kind of thing? Yeah.
Yeah.
So it becomes like a sort of startup hub.
Exactly. And then just start chucking ideas around. See where it takes you.
Well, thanks, Ellie. I don't know we can try, but I don't know that we can necessarily restrain Henry.
Also, Ellie doesn't write this specifically, but I think reading between the lines, if listeners arrive at the Jorvik Viking Centre, say the word Pompidou to the at the ticket booth, that's 20% off, I think.
Not including hot chocolates and Mockers.
She doesn't write that specifically, but I just think, come on.
It's implied, isn't it?
Yeah. 20% off Jorvik Viking Centre.
Great news. What a great way to end the series.
What a great way to end the series. And thank you to everyone for listening to this series, and we'll be back in a bit.
Soon.
Yeah, before Christmas, certainly.
What?
We'll tell you later, Henry.
Thanks.
Okay, we've got some theme tunes. We've had lots sent in, actually. Great. So we've got 6 for you to choose from.
Holy moly.
Do you want to hear the version of our theme tune made by Chris, Tom, Lillian, Fern, Rebecca? Choose one of those.
Have they all done theme tunes, those people?
That was 5. That was 5. You said 6 and you listed 5.
Because Lillian has sent in 2.
No. Well, let's hear one of the Lillian's one, shall we?
So Lillian has sent in 2. I will read her email. "I'm writing to share 2 versions of the Three Bean Salad theme tune. One is a mercifully brief bluegrass interpretation.
Oh, nice.
The other is in honour of Mike's remark about the viola in our episode about portraits. He says, one of the instruments that no one's bothered about. As a professional violist... That might sting a bit.
Oh, no.
But she says it's completely accurate.
Oh, don't say that.
She's got 2 theme tunes. One's bluegrass version and one's called 3 Viola Salad.
Oh, well, bluegrass appeals to me enormously, but I think it's got to be viola, hasn't it?
I think so.
It seems the appropriate one to round
the series.
I think
we need to celebrate the viola.
With thanks and apologies.
Yeah.
And I think really, like, we haven't spoken about this explicitly, but I feel like... when we embarked on this second series, we all felt, I think, deep down, that what it was a celebration of the viola.
Mm. Yes.
You know?
I think that comes through. If you listen to the little clues dropped here and there, we've woven that in.
And if you go back and just, you know, if it's just like a nice Sunday, just, you've got some time off, just want to relax, just go back and maybe listen to again from the beginning, maybe with some, you know, a bowl of courgette mousse or something.
Just sit back and just imagine and just... slightly oversized violin that's a bit lower in pitch.
But being played not with a whatever you call the thing you normally play it with, but with a courgette.
So thank you for this, Lillian. Lillian from Kansas.
From Kansas, no less.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. See you.
You're not a long way from Kansas now, probably.
Right, let's stop
now.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.